Hello, everyone. Joshua Gilliland here from the Legal Geeks, and with me is Judge Matthew Chirino and novelist Jerry O'Brien. Gentlemen, how are you doing?
Good evening, Josh.
Excellent. Well, we're here from California to New York to discuss the most recent episode of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Gentlemen, what'd you think of the Kree and Lady Sif?
I like the episode. I think they're really starting to find where they want to be in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. It's clearly moving towards setting up things for the movies, which I think really is the purpose to some extent of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., to keep those that love the movies kind of into the backstory. And those that aren't into the backstory can just show up at the movies. But, you know, it keeps people thinking about the movies. They clearly introduce a lot of trailers for other sci-fi movies during the show. But it's definitely on a rise. I think every episode of this season has been much better than last season. And they seem to be definitely an upward climb rather than a downward spiral, which is always good.
Jerry, your thoughts?
Oh, that was a great episode. What was the name of it? Who You Really Are, which could apply to any number of the characters in this episode. I agree with Matt. I think that you're going to see a lot of shoehorning the events of this series into the upcoming movies. Maybe not so much Age of Ultron, but more Captain America Civil Wars, because there is this backdrop regarding Mac and Bobby, who they're working for, because they're clearly conspiring against Coulson and S.H.I.E.L.D. for some greater good. And I think it might be Stark, because Tony Stark is being set up in this movie, Age of Ultron, and then Captain America Civil War, as a bit of a foil, because he's taking the government's side. And I assume that they don't trust, or he doesn't trust, Phil Coulson anymore, or not enough. And they may want to find out what's going on and have some control or pressure on Coulson that they can exert at some point if they see that he's a threat.
I agree with that plot analysis. I think it'll be their way of having the cameo from Hawkeye and possibly even Stark if they really wanted to go big and they had a big surprise before Age of Ultron came out. I think that's the connection, especially since Bobby and Hawkeye are married in the comic books, or were. That's a very complicated story, but they were married in the comic books. So that would make sense for him to come in through that medium and to have him working for Stark, because they obviously have to be in some form of law enforcement. They're not Hydra. They've been working towards the common good that S.H.I.E.L.D.'s been doing, but also obviously wanting to take them down. And there was also the line that maybe we could be friends again. So there's definitely a law enforcement feel to what they're doing. And they're
If not law enforcement, then at least from their perspective, a greater good, which arguably could be other organizations that we've seen in the Marvel Universe in comics, AIM, Hammer, Sword, and there's even some thought about the Edward J. Olmos character that's going to be introduced, I think, in the next episode or two, who does not appear in the comics. What his role is and who he is in this, he's a potential person that they could be reporting to.
Not to make a Star Wars analogy, because you know how I hate to talk about Star Wars, but you know, clearly there's been a propaganda war, much like the Emperor waged against the Jedi, with regards to S.H.I.E.L.D., in that a lot of this level of mistrust is probably instigated from our good general and other people within the United States government itself, which is not as pro-S.H.I.E.L.D. as it was at the beginning of the series, because a job really has been done to make them into a bad guy, into a rogue agency as well. And I think the average Joe on the street really doesn't you know, isn't going to be able to part who's Hydra, who's S.H.I.E.L.D., who's the good, who's the bad. All they know is all of these people with these special powers, these deviant powers, these mutant powers are different. And clearly this also is a tie-in to what will happen in the Marvel Universe, where the regulars and the deviants and the non-regulars or the mutants are, you know, granted the X-Men universe isn't part of this universe, but it still has that mutant feel to it, where it's the normals against the supernormals.
The Inhuman versus the Deviant, and it'll be telling to see how they do that. I think we're all kind of on very similar pages with this. You know, with General Talbot, we've seen interactions with S.H.I.E.L.D. that almost make them look legitimate, that there's quasi-approval of what they're doing because trades take place. So there's kind of a detente there, but that's still kind of weird situation to be in.
And it doesn't mean that Talbot would not be trying to subvert or gain intelligence from agents who are working within S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah, he should be doing that, and law enforcement should be going after them still. So unless the fictional President Ellis gave everyone a pardon and there was an amnesty act passed by Congress, which we haven't heard that in any of the little news clips that they have in the show, like, they're still wanted felons for treason. So, like, it's not a good place to be. Well, let's dig into the episode with some of the issues in it and some of the backstory. Now, Jerry, you grew up reading comics. Could you educate the judge as if you were an expert witness on who are the Kree?
I'm glad you asked that. The Kree are one of the more important galactic civilizations in the Marvel Universe. If I were to describe them in other kinds of scientific parlance, I'd say they probably run the closest to the Federation. They're humanoid, and they come in several different colors. There's pink Kree, which are the majority of the race, but the blue-skinned Kree, which are a minority, are the dominant force in their society. And the Kree exist on a variety of planets. They're spread out throughout the galaxy. They have a very strong military. They have advanced starship technology. They're governed by a collective, which is the minds of dozens, maybe hundreds of their former leaders, known as the Supreme Intelligence. It's basically a hive mind that, you know, is added to every time one of their leaders is subsumed into this entity. And the Kree have been around for a long, long time, many, many millennia.
Are all the military blue, or are there some pink in the military?
Oh, there are pink in the military, yes.
Or is it, it's not a don't ask, don't tell.
No.
The pinks have the right to be in the military.
There are many shades of pink and blue in the Kree military. And
are blue and pink allowed to marry?
I believe they are. But there are probably some, like Ronan the Accuser from the Guardians of the Galaxy, who is a bit more of a radical. He's a warmonger. The character we saw in this episode, Vintak is his name, is a blue Kree who apparently by taking nitrogen is able to pass himself off as a pink human. But in any case, the Kree have been around for many, many millennia. And in addition to having outposts on various worlds, they've experimented on the inhabitants of many worlds to try and create basically, if not slaves, then sort of a warrior class of locals that they can use in their offensives against other races like the Skrulls, the Badoon, whomever they may be fighting. And what they've done is they've created these Terrigen crystals that we saw in the fall finale that release Terrigen mist that basically mutate the recipients into a different form of life. And if you've got the Inhuman gene, you'll be affected by the Terrigen mist. If you don't have the Inhuman gene like Trip, you'll die. And you'll be changed forever. As we've seen, Sky or Daisy Johnson has become someone who is capable of generating shockwaves, whereas Reyna is basically a human porcupine. And Gordon, the fellow who rescued her at the end of the next to last episode, while he's missing his eyes, he's able to teleport much like one of the X-Men. So these Terrigen mists do a lot of strange things to people. And apparently the Kree believe that those who've been changed are an abomination and need to be wiped out. The Asgardians believe they're more moderate. They believe that people who've been changed by the Terrigen mists are dangerous and need to be incapacitated. And, of course, Sky is stuck right in the middle between all of this.
Yeah, why was the Terrigen mist created but for the fact of creating some kind of soldier race in that? Weren't they trying to create superhumans? And if they were trying to create superhumans, why are the superhumans deemed to be unacceptable and
I think what's happened is that there has been a bit of a metamorphosis within Kree society so that they are no longer actively pursuing this technology and attempting to experiment on people. And I guess Vintak, to some extent, is trying to clean up the mess that's been left for him by previous generations of Kree warriors.
There's also the passage of time at this that is pretty extreme, because it's on the order of magnitude of several thousand years. There was a reference in one of the earlier episodes in S.H.I.E.L.D., I think from the first season, that this went back to the time of the pyramids. So we're talking 5,000 years ago. I don't think any Kree lived for that long. I think they have normalish lifespans compared to a human, but it is a far advanced society that did these genetic experiments when mankind was very young as a society, and could be mistaken as a religious encounter instead. Jerry, I give us a pat on the back. We kind of predicted the Kree would make an appearance early on because of S.H.I.E.L.D. going into the city, that they would trigger an alarm, and I feel really good about that.
Yes, but they sent the wrong Kree.
That was my next question. So in the comics, I still think we're going to see them. In the comics, Captain Mar-Vell is the spy who goes to Earth. There were other Kree in a satellite or a ship in deep orbit above Earth who were like the support team. Do you remember some of their names so we could try watching for them in future episodes?
Well, Mar-Vell's commanding officer, who was a very evil guy, was a guy by the name of Yon-Rogg. That's the only name that I recall offhand, because he basically set Mar-Vell up to fail and tried to assassinate him when he was on Earth, and it didn't work out. He suspected Mar-Vell was developing an affection for these, you know, primitive humans, and he was right. I maintain that, you know, it would be nice to have seen Mar-Vell appear in 1947 Roswell, New Mexico in a future season of Agent Carter, but any port in a storm is good. However they can shoehorn Captain Mar-Vell into Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. or Agent Carter is fine by me.
And I think they will, and I do think we'll see the Kree again, because they can't send someone back to their homeworld who erased his own memory somehow by, I guess, Bobby holding his hand with the hammer in it, and not expect him to either return that memory or those around him going like, so why'd you come back? Why don't you remember anything? You think that'd be a warning sign that they would send others to investigate what's going on?
Or those others may already be here, because they didn't specify how Vintak got to Earth. Now, the Asgardians have the Bifrost, be able to teleport people from their realm to Earth and back. I don't understand. I don't believe that the Kree have that. The Kree basically have faster-than-light starship technology. So it is entirely possible that there's a ship still in orbit that Vintak took from the Kree homeworld, Hala, to get to Earth, and it's still up there. Could be on automatic pilot. Could be a crew up there that's dropped him off and is, you know, doing some scans in some nearby star systems, and is at some point going to come back and look for him, and they're going to find out he's not there. And who knows, maybe Mar-Vell is still on that ship, and he's the B team that comes down and sort of clean up Vintak's mess.
Or the captain of that ship. I mean, the fact, I don't know any of the background comics of the Marvel Universe. I was a DC guy. I listened to your podcast last week, and I was chatting with Josh as the episode was on, and basically saying how well you two predicted the episode as it was going online. Otherwise, I don't think I would have known a lot of that was going on. But for listening to the podcast the week before. So what it shows me is that the writers clearly know the lore very, very well. And clearly those that are writing the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., they at least have people, or they themselves are big fans of this entire storyline. And clearly, with the movies that are coming out and the timeline that's out there, and Captain Marvel and all those that are down the line, I think at some point you're going to see Mar-Vell as well.
Thank you. I'm glad you liked the podcast last week. And I think they will, because there are too many uber geeks out there. And when we think back to Agent Carter, the fact they were able to make such a very, very deep reference to a Sergeant Fury and the Howling Commandos comic, you know, we're on notice that they're capable of doing wonderful tributes to comics from the Silver Age of comic books. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, they've got 50 some odd years of continuity that they can dip into and use to a certain degree at will without really having any major effect on what's going on in the movies. They've got a lot of backdrop there, backstory, and they've been using it very judiciously. They haven't done it all in a kind of pell-mell way that you see sometimes on some of the DC Universe shows like The Flash and Arrow, but they're doing it making a very judicious use of it, and I think that we're going to see more as the season comes to a close, because there are three episodes of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. that will be aired after Age of Ultron has premiered. I think you're going to see a lot of synergy between that movie and those final three episodes.
If Winter Soldier is a hint of what they could do, those would probably be some of the best episodes of the season. And they're firing in all cylinders right now. So, I am very excited about this.
Yeah, the last couple of episodes in season two have been really, really good. And they're not shy anymore about the fact that Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. are living and working in a superhero universe. You've seen teleportation, you've seen aliens, you've seen in the City of the Inhumans, you've seen the Terrigen Mists and Terrigenesis. You know, they're embracing the superhero aspect of the Marvel Universe with both arms.
Which brings us to Asgard and Lady Sif. I'd like to see Jamie Alexander in two or three episodes a season. I think that would be good, or to give her a Netflix special or two, because she does a great job as Sif.
Yeah, great actress, great character, and a lot of potential there.
I don't want to say she was overshadowed, but I think it's because she fit in so well that I was aware she was there, but it didn't feel special because it just felt right.
It advanced the story.
Yeah. It was a good fit. She fits in well with them. You know, have her visit more than once a year would be my wish, because she did. It was such a wonderful, wonderful job with her. But I noticed a couple legal issues with her. And Your Honor, do you want to take any thoughts on Sif's legal issue she could have created on Earth?
She clearly had she was very brutally attacked upon her coming to Earth. Her memories were stolen from her. She was clearly assaulted. She was very, very brutally damaged by a Kree who was acting on the behalf of his planet and his government, and attacked someone who was of the Asgardian government or nationality, but it happened here on Earth, and I would guess there would be some redress for them.
It creates an interesting spy versus spy type situation, just because there are no extradition treaties and international or interplanetary agreements between Earth, Asgard, and Hela, just because there aren't. I mean, it's so that's kind of an interesting take. My reaction with Sif was there was the guy who went from hitting on her to being pervy, and she sent him flying, 50 feet. Which, on principle, I agree with, but that's not the way to. She could have killed him, so that probably just a slap would have been a better cause of action there. To a threat of elder abuse with her to, her statement of, tell us what you know, old man or elderly man. her good cop, bad cop with Coulson, was absolutely awesome. In this episode. So that was really fun to watch them interact.
I love hearing her refer to Phil as the son of Cole.
It is pretty awesome. Well,
she's quick. She's a great character. I likewise, I hope she's brought back. I like when she has her full memories and she's, full on Norse, more than the having the amnesia. But she's clearly a character I hope they bring back a lot. And I think that they will, because I think she's one of the fan favorites. The episodes with her have always been good. It seems like they have enough money to actually create the special effects that are needed to create the bridge to go to and from Asgard. So I hope to see her again.
She adds a lot of firepower to the team, too. With her, with Melinda May, and with Bobby, you've got three kick-ass female fighters on your team, which, again, a lot of firepower. They could use her help.
Throw in Daisy with that mix now, and yes.
Female Avengers.
Exactly, which I think they're doing. I don't think that's come out yet, but that's not important. What is important is, politically, Jerry, if we had a world where we were starting to see people who can get altered because of their genetic heritage and turn into someone who's covered with thorns or their eyes disappear, politically, how do you deal with that? Because we, as a society, we're against discrimination. We're not into that.
Well, if human history is any judge, the first reaction is going to be denial. This can't be happening. It's fantasy. It's so on. And then I think you're going to see hysteria. And you're already seeing that in the role of Simmons, who, is sort of destroy all monsters mode right now. She wants to shoot to kill anybody that's different, anybody who she perceives as being a threat. And I don't know if anybody else has thought about it, but I could see her now, because she realizes that Fitz lied to her and knew about Daisy or Skye's powers all along. I could see her maybe being seduced to go back to work for Hydra. If Hydra were to articulate a strong, hard line against Inhumans, mutants, and those who are different.
Or Stark, when Civil War hits, she could easily end up in that camp.
I think she'd make a great Madame Hydra.
Wow. Did not see that coming. The initial character switch seemed a little forced, but the kind of gradual being angry seems to make sense, and they're dangerous, they need to be taken care of. That'd be interesting to see if she goes that far.
Especially if one of her loved ones or one of the other agents is taken out by one of the Inhumans or the Divergents. I can see her making that turn to the dark side.
I think it started with Trip being killed by the Terrigen Mists in the fall finale. That had a profound effect on her. She probably had, at that point in time, a deeper connection to him than anyone else on the team, including Fitz, who she's been estranged from.
That, and you throw in Reyna killing two other S.H.I.E.L.D. agents and taking out another three. That's motivation to go, these people are dangerous and need to be wiped out, which is the really hard line of this as opposed to detained. But yeah, it's a very anti-civil rights viewpoint because it's a very us them.
And it sets her up to take a hard line on, you know, an Inhuman Registration Act, a Powers Registration Act, whatever they end up wanting to call it when Captain America Civil War premieres.
Which, why don't we take a moment, theorize about that? Because in the comics, the Registration Act was a little amorphic. Different writers played with it in different ways. But the gist of it was all super beings had to register with the federal government, turn over their secret identities, and they could be conscripted into the government, into a military type operation. I mean, that's the general gist of it. We already have the Index in the Marvel Cinematic Universe that had the list of people who had powers that were known. So like on one level, it already existed.
Stephen Strange, among others.
Yeah, and the other half of it, I mean, when you throw in Zola algorithm, I mean, like it really was known. And then all that was dumped out onto the internet. So a lot of that's already public knowledge. The Inhuman level would change that because it could be new people who are now popping up. But what will the Civil War, as in Captain America Civil War, Registration Act look like? Because I think it has to be different. I just don't know different how.
Well, they've got to include anybody who has superpowers or is a masked superhero, because even though he doesn't have superpowers per se, Captain America fits the bill. Uh-huh. Anybody who does have superpowers, like the Hulk, anybody who had developed superpowers like Daisy and Reyna and the rest of the Inhumans, and they may even create another category for, you know, people who are involved with them and accessories.
In the comics, they actually created a prison in the Negative Zone, which was a place that they put those that they didn't want to deal with, and it was very interdimensional Gitmo type of theme to it. I could see them going just for the concentration camp type solution out of the gate because it has to be appalling. When you look at what they've already had in the movies, they have to one up that. And so are we just going right for detainment and sentenced to an island, you know, just removed from society? Is that the extreme that they could go to?
For noncompliance? Yeah, I think so. I think they could do that. Matt?
Yeah, I would say that they're going to probably go into some kind of almost solitary type of confinement where they're going to be in cage, you know, depending on their superpower, some kind of real draconian type of prison that's going to be able to contain them. And by the very nature of having to contain superhumans, it's going to have to be a pretty badass fortress. I mean, there's no other way around it. I mean, it's going to have to it's not going to let them have really any time together. So it's almost going to be a 24/7 solitary or some kind of freeze chamber or something along, you know, the line of a true full containment would be the, you know.
Well, they've already alluded to
for the others.
They've already alluded to a suspended animation or a freeze chamber being used on the Abomination. They mentioned that, I think, in season one of S.H.I.E.L.D. I think what they need is something like that, or something that is alluded to in the new PlayStation series Powers, where they have this device called drainers that temporarily drain superpowered people of their powers. Because if you have someone who has great abilities, whether it's teleportation, extreme strength, or the ability to shoot fireballs, you just can't lock them in a cell. They will find a way to escape, but either by teleportation or by basically physically wrecking the cell and tearing the door off its hinges. So there has to be some method to render them powerless.
Yeah, a neutralizer of some kind.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's not like Simmons going to be the evil genius to come up with that. And so some repressive inhuman, you know, something to repress the inhuman gene. But what we've all just discussed were situations so inhuman, they would violate the Eighth Amendment. So this is legal. It would be fun to see what they do. Like, we have time to think about this. The writers have time to really write something draconian that would be offensive to liberty. So that's kind of exciting to see where they could go with it, just because this is a fun analytical exercise that makes people, in my view, when the comic Civil War came out, it was an interesting thought experience on the war on terror. And they did a very nice job with that. And I wouldn't be surprised if the movie can pose similar questions. So, but anyway, I thought this was a fantastic episode. And you gentlemen, other wishes that you have for the remainder of the season? Your honor?
I like the way they're going. I mean, I it's clearly going to tie into the movies that are coming out. So it's whatever little background foreshadowing to give us hints as to what's going to be in Age of Ultron and in the Civil War and in the next Iron Man are always appreciated. So hopefully we'll get some nice little tidbits of things that are going to be coming in the movies.
Jerry?
I like the way they're going. I think they've got a great cast. They've got some terrific writers. It's headed in the right direction. What I'd like to see is just a continuation of more of the same, more what I would call low-level cross-pollination of the Marvel Comics continuity. You know, the great thing about reading Marvel Comics back in the early 60s, and I remember buying the first Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. in Strange Tales in 1965, was that, you know, if you lived in the Marvel Universe in the comics and you needed a lawyer, you went to Matt Murdock. If you needed, you know, a scientist, you went to Reed Richards or you went to somebody like that. If you needed an inventor, you'd go to Tony Stark. But there's this whole, you know, universe of other smaller characters that they really haven't touched on yet. A great one, for example, is Rick Jones, the young teenager who was sort of the inciting incident for the Incredible Hulk getting his powers. You know, he could show up somewhere in some capacity. There's a whole flood of people. For example, Sharon Carter, who you've seen very briefly in Captain America, the Winter Soldier. She's, I think, a great niece of Peggy Carter, and she's Agent 13 of S.H.I.E.L.D. We haven't really seen anything of her. There's no reason why she can't make a cameo. I just like to see a lot of other stuff, and it doesn't have to be forced. It can just be, you know, passing them in the hallway, a very soft reference to them, like with the Abomination in Season 1. And just, you know, I'm glad that they've embraced the superhero world. If they continue to do that and continue doing the other things that they have been doing, I think the season is going to end on a strong note, and they'll come back next year and do even better things.
I agree. I'm very optimistic. I really like what they're doing. I have my predictions on where they're going, but they seem to, each episode seems to be a solid base hit, double, or a triple. You know, they're, and I'm sure they're going to hit a couple home runs about the time that Age of Ultron comes out. And I really, I'm very, very optimistic that, you know, they're just going to keep doing a great job. So, Your Honor, Jerry, thank you so much for your time. And everyone, keep watching Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Take care.